Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodge. Thomas Drantz here with me as well. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at dunbarlumber.com. Big night tonight at Rogers Arena. Of course, the Canucks taking on the Philadelphia Flyers. And additionally, they are going to honor one of the great defensemen in the franchise's history, Alex Edler, signing a one-day deal to officially retire as a Vancouver Canuck and be honored at tonight's game. And he now joins us on the phone to chat about it. He is Alex Edler. Alex, thanks so much for taking some time today. I'm sure it's a very busy day for you. We really appreciate it. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you guys?
We're doing great. So you get the opportunity to sign the one-day deal and officially retire as a Canuck. What is that opportunity, that chance to do so and have the event tonight? What does that mean to you?
It means a lot. I'm, you know, very honored that I got this question, this opportunity to do that. You know, this organization has meant so much for me, for my career, and, you know, been in this city for so long. So I think, you know, when I got the question, an opportunity to do that, I felt very honored and thankful. And, you know, it means that you meant something to the club. And like I said, the club meant so much for me, so much to me for so many years.
Alex, congratulations on sort of formally concluding your storied playing career. When you think about what today has been like for you and what yesterday was like signing the contract and filing the paperwork, can you give us a sense of what it's been like emotionally to go through this over the last 24 hours?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when you come back after being away from the city for a while, and you know, you see the, you know, how passionate everyone is here about hockey, about the team, and you know, that you're still you get to recognition even though you're done playing and you're not out on the ice anymore. So, you know, this organization and this city makes you feel very special.
You know, Alex, the last few seasons, we've seen quite a few of your teammates honored at Rogers Arena, right? The Sedin twins, Luongo, Bieksa, Burrows. How does it feel for you to kind of look back on what that group, those teams specifically, accomplished while you were playing together with the Canucks?
Yeah, I think, you know, that was to be part of that team, been part of teams like that, like we were there for a few years. You know, that's definitely one of the highlights of my career, those years when we were that good. And like those guys you mentioned were, you know, the core of that, of those teams. So, you know, I feel it was a special time to be a Canuck. And, you know, those are like memories and friends that you'll have forever.
Bunch of your friends and countrymen, whether it's Mikhail Samuelson or of course, Henrik and Daniel, now working for the team in player development roles. Have you had to screen their calls, or have they been actively recruiting you, Alex?
No, I think they've just been letting me enjoy my time with my family, and that's kind of what I've been doing for the last year, and then it's been great. I don't really have an answer about the future, but we'll see. We'll see what happens, and if I get into something somewhere, I'm not sure yet.
Do you have the itch though to stay in the game, stay involved?
I think, like I said, now I've just really enjoyed family time. But I mean, I'm still, you know, I still love the game, and you know, you miss when you're back and you're in the rink and you realize that you missed this part. So I mean, maybe there'll be something that I'll do in the future. I'm not sure. I don't really have an answer yet, though.
When you think about, you know, just walking in and being at morning skate today, seeing the ice surface, is there a memory that you've been sort of turning over in your head, Alex, from an on-ice perspective, just something from your Canucks tenure that stuck out to you as you've sort of put pen to paper and concluded things here this week?
I think there's just so many memories that I'm kind of thinking back at, and it's just all the players you play with, and staff and coaches and everything, and playing in front of the fans here at Rogers Arena. You're like those when you're back at the rink, you realize that you miss those things. So it's fun to be back here, I'm very excited and very happy, and like very honored to have this day.
With earlier today, when you were speaking with the media, you had some hugely complimentary things to say about Quinn Hughes, who of course was your teammate in his first few NHL seasons and toward the end of your Canucks tenure here. When you see where he's gone as a player, winning the Norris, the way that he's sort of improved as a shooter, improved his defensive game. I mean, how impressed are you when you think back to the player that you sort of first played with toward the tail end of that season after he signed out of Michigan?
Yeah, I think you saw right away when he came here how like the potential and how good this guy is going to be. And then, like you say, it's always for defensemen coming into the NHL. There's things that you have to learn, the consistency and the playing good defense. And but Quinn, he's got this so much talent, and he's so skilled and so good, and he's a smart guy. So he picked up that part of the game pretty quick, and he's started a really good career, and he's going to have a long, very good career.
And in addition to Quinn Hughes, Alex, you were here to see the beginnings of Brock Besser's career, Elias Pettersson. I mean, JT Miller, not the start of his career, but when he arrived in Vancouver and joined the Canucks. And I think, Thatcher Demko, throw him in there as well. I think we've all known how much talent those players have. And then last year, really, it finally came together from a team perspective. We saw the regular season they have, and then going to game 7 in the playoffs against the Edmonton Oilers. What was it like for you to kind of watch that group, and especially those players that you saw come into the NHL? What was it like for you to watch that group take that step forward last year?
Yeah, I think it's always fun to see young guys come in that has like this huge potential, and there's a reason why those guys are still here, and they are the core guys. That's why, because they are so good, and it's fun to have seen them come in and develop into superstars and core players and the leaders of a team. So it's fun to watch.
Alex, one thing we hear sometimes now around the NHL from players is a bit of a wariness or a concern about playing in Canadian markets, Vancouver specifically, maybe just because of the attention and the passion from the fans and us in the media sometimes as well. I mean, you played here a long time, and you chose to sign here on multiple occasions. What would you say to a player maybe who did have concerns about coming to a Canadian market? What would you tell them about playing in a place like Vancouver and that experience?
Yeah, I think, there is a lot of attention. There's media, and, there's like a 24/7 kind of, you're in it. But I think, what you mentioned, the passion of the fans, that kind of, that overweights everything else, to be able to play in a city like Vancouver and have that support from the fans. That's just something, that you shouldn't take for granted, and you should really appreciate that part, because it's pretty special.
Alex, we really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us here. Congratulations again on your career, and it's going to be a special night at Rogers Arena. I hope you and your family really enjoy it. We've got a lot of texts coming in from listeners saying how much they appreciated your days as a Canuck. So thank you and congratulations, and enjoy tonight at Rogers Arena.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
That is Alex Edler, a former Canucks defenseman, of course, as I said, franchise record holder in many different categories amongst blue liners, just a warrior for this team for a long time. And I think you got a sense there from hearing him talk about what his time in Vancouver meant to him. And, an interesting career for Alex Edler in the sense of, I kind of brought it up there, right? He was a core part of the great Canucks teams built around Luongo and the Sedins, and now he's the latest member of that group to be honored at Rogers Arena. But then he also was here to see the beginning of Elias Pettersson's career and Brock Besser's career and Quinn Hughes' career and play with those guys in the bubble, right? And have a really big impact, be a big part of that team.
Oh, yeah.
In the bubble, a huge part of that team, and kind of bridges eras for the Canucks in a fairly unique way, Alex Edler.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, him and Tanev, it's just that really Edler's career started so much earlier. I mean, Edler was kind of coming up in that sort of early Luongo era, mm-hmm. you know, like I'm talking the like defensive minded Alain Vigneault yep. teams. Those were sort of the teams that Edler broke into. And then, you know, you think about like this was the guy who quarterbacked the neutral zone drop pass that so revolutionized power play entries and so frustrated Boomer Canucks fans to this day. Like, I hope there's lots of neutral zone drop passes on the
in honor of Alex Edler.
In honor of Alex Edler, let's get some neutral zone drop passes going. We need a really sick Quinn Hughes set entry. Maybe fake the drop pass and go in alone. Edler scored one of the coolest goals of his career against the Columbus Blue
yes.
Jackets in that manner.
That was so good.
A physical player. I mean, some huge hits that Edler through everyone will remember the hit on Drew Doughty.
Yeah, that is the, for me, iconic Alex Edler moment.
Well, I think there's a bunch, but yeah, that's fair. I mean, that was a huge goal.
The thing I loved
goal.
About Alex Edler in the playoffs, too, was it was
the moment, game one, always had like
he's a beast. He's a monster all of a sudden. He's like all of a sudden this terrorizing figure for the other team as soon as the playoffs started. It was incredible.
Yeah, Alex Edler throwing one gigantic hit in like the first or second period of Vancouver's first playoff game was like an annual tradition.
It was so good. It was fantastic.
Every bit is something you could set your watch to, like the car flags. And and then it wasn't just like he could do that. And he had that physical game, especially like later on in his mm-hmm. career, sort of toward the twilight of his career, where he had the kidney cross checks and just the like you didn't want to go to the net front with Alex Edler there, and he was just a mean piece of work along the wall and down low. But also, you know, there he could do that. But also during the Canucks heyday, like it was Burrows and then it was Edler. First two shooters in the shootout. And then Mason Raymond. You know, I mean, think about how versatile you have to be to be like the masher. Right. And the guy who later in their career becomes like, you know, a rich man's Craig Revey or something in terms of the physical defensive style, but also be like, yeah. And, you know, I was a above average shootout guy. Like they couldn't use the Twins because I was too good in the shootout. I mean, honestly, there was a lot that he could do. Now, he also was, you know, I think like a lot of players, a lot of defensemen in particular. Right. There's nothing more frequently criticized in the NHL than the bona fide top pair defenseman on an overmatched team.
Yes.
Right? And that was Edler sort of, that was a big part of Edler's second act as well, the second act of his career. And then you got to this moment where the team was so dependent on his two-way IQ, and there was so little of it elsewhere on the roster, that every time Edler got hurt at some point in the season, is like, you know, I'm talking his age, like 33, 32 yes. seasons, the Canucks would be like 500, and people would be like, wow, this plucky team has a shot. They'd lose one of the two top pair defenders on the roster. It was him and Chris Tanev, who also like massively underrated top pair for this team across Canucks history. And everything would fall apart, right? Which was always kind of a testament to Edler retaining just unique value to this hockey club, like almost right to the end of his career.
No doubt about it. And a fantastic career for Alex Edler. He will get honored tonight.
Drop passes for everybody.
Drop pass. I want to see the big open ice hit. And Jolson's in the lineup. So there's somebody who's going to be looking to do it, to step up at the blue line and deliver a big open ice hit in Alex Edler's honor tonight. Okay, for more on tonight's game, I don't think Rick Tocchet spoke for a super long time at Rogers Arena after the
optional game day
skate.
But it was a good time.
I'm sure it was a great time. It's Rick Tocchet, so you know it was a great time. So let's hear from the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick Tocchet.
Let's work on a couple of things. You know, I think our breakouts and things like that will have to be better. Obviously, D-zone coverage. And, you know, when you give up a 3-goal lead, you know, you're a little more high alert. Playing a team that I think is, you know, one of the hardest working teams in the league. They've proven it last year, and no different than this year, so we got to put our work boots on.
It feels like that's something that you seem like you're excited about, playing against one of these hardworking teams and having to step up to that level for your group as well.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, we need to just be ready. You know, like, hey, listen, you play aggressive teams, if you're in the right spots and you're willing to put your work boots on, you're going to get your chances, you know. But if you're a little bit lazy and your details aren't there, the advantage goes to those teams that really work hard. Every team should work hard, but, you know, like I said, it's one of those things that they work really hard.
Rick, what are you doing in goal tonight?
Lanx.
And will you skate the way you skated yesterday, Suter back in and Juulsen on defense?
Yeah, Juulsen and Suter will go in, Alms, and then Vinny will go out.
We are celebrating Alex Edler tonight. Yeah. Just looking at this at a broader spectrum, what does it mean to see a guy like this get to make his retirement in Vancouver?
Yeah, I mean, just from afar watching him play, just like, I think if you describe him, just a consistent player. I was talking to the Twins about him, guys that, you know, Myers actually played with in Kelowna, how they respected it professionally was very rarely had bad games. Like, he's game in and game out, is a very consistent defenseman. That's what I respect about him. Was it 15 years here? It's a long time to play on one team. That's so it gives a perspective how well liked and what kind of player he was for the Canucks.
Mitch Koff, obviously, he's getting lots of attention. What have you seen, or have you watched him much? And just playing these young, dynamic players, how do you approach that?
Yeah, I watched a couple exhibition games a few weeks ago. I forget the team he played, maybe Boston. Just the way he can shoot the puck and his patience. You know, that's a knack, that's a gift you can tell that he has. So, yeah, he looks like he's going to be a dangerous guy here for a bunch of years.
With this Philly team last year, they were played fast. You know, they've got a young team. How important is puck management going to be against them?
Yeah, puck and game management is big. But also, you know, like I always say, you know, you're playing a team that likes the pressure. You got to find the pressure, too. You can't go away from it. That's something that tonight, like I said, you know, we had a meeting today. Like, we're going to find that pressure, and you can always get some stuff out of it, some good stuff out of it, if you go find it. If you go away from it, then, like I said, it's a long night.
That is Rick Tocchet speaking to the media after the team had an optional game day skate before they take on the Flyers tonight at Rogers Arena, and a different variation on meet pressure with pressure, but gotta find the pressure is the message there from Rick Tocchet, because as he said, he knows that the Philadelphia Flyers are going to work hard. They are going to bring the pressure, and then also repeating a couple of times that the team's got to put their work boots on, right? And I think getting back to that sense of, they're in the process of building a new identity. There's going to be elements of the old identity, right? And I think that's what he's speaking to there, is we got to try to maintain that ethic of, you know, the work ethic and all of that, the hustle, the energy that they have to have, while also figuring out a way to graft the new things on. And a bit of a challenge against the hardworking Philadelphia Flyers coming into town tonight.
Yeah, you got to find that that try-hard ethos that this team so impressively carved out over the course of last season.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that, you know, the idea that they got outworked by Calgary, and it's not an idea, it's a fact. Mm-hmm. That's what happened in the latter 40 minutes. Like, that, you know, that to me is far more than the, well, this team was 42-1-4 after leading by two. It's like, okay, and then they lost twice in the playoffs after when they were leading by two. Like, mm-hmm. that's not an identity. That's what happened. That's descriptive, right? What for sure happened, though, is even when they coughed up a lead in those rare instances, you'd still leave and be like, well, the Canucks were the hardest working team on the ice that night. They do have to get back to that. They do have to get back to that try-hard ethos.
Yeah. You have to be what they're trying to be basically is a super try-hard team that's also dynamic and dangerous.
Right.
Right? Which, like,
it sounds easy.
Well, no, it's not easy, but it's also, like, that's probably a pretty good description of teams that win the Stanley Cup, right?
Yeah.
Teams that have an incredible motor, work really, really hard, are super detailed, and also have the guys who can burn you off the rush and be really dynamic and creative.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, that's a Stanley Cup contender.
Yep.
Right there. Those are the things you need to have to be a Stanley Cup contender. So it makes perfect sense. Yes, it's difficult. It's not easy. We're going to see how they manage it, right? But it makes perfect sense why they're setting their sights there and trying to accomplish that. And, you know, earlier we were talking about how stubborn they'll be with this strategy, right?
And this text came in. I'm not sure how easy it will be for Tocchet to stick to the more rush offense strategy if they go 500 this month and Demko still looks iffy to play anytime soon. 500? I mean,
that shouldn't even be stressful.
That's the thing, right? Like, I know there's all these markers of, hey, by November 1st and American Thanksgiving, and you want to keep touch with the race and everything. But, like, 500 in your first 10 games, that's not a disaster.
No. I mean, 500 in your first 10 games is no problem whatsoever. The fact is that this, like, if you believe that this Canucks team has, like, 105-point true talent level, mm-hmm. right? 105-point team. Well, you can easily survive 10 games of 500 hockey. And in fact, you know, 10 games of 500 hockey can be more impressive than 10 games of 800 hockey where everything's going your way.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, if you get through a month where you're down Dakota Joshua, you're down Thatcher Demko, you're tweaking systems right off the hop, you didn't exactly have a running start through the preseason. You know, that to me is fine. Like, that to me is not a problem at all. What I'm more sort of talking about from a stubbornness perspective is, we know Philly's not a great matchup for Vancouver based on what we saw last season.
I think what you're talking about is more what's the process, right?
What's the process? But also, let's look ahead. You've got Philly. Yeah. You've got the two Florida teams. We have a lot of respect for both those Florida teams, as we should. And you've got Philly again. You've got Chicago. Exhale. Then you've got
exhale too much though.
No, because Connor Bedard can absolutely
kill
you.
And also, like, don't exhale and treat it lightly and come out with no juice and embarrass yourselves.
Then
right?
you've got Sidney Crosby coming to town, the Pittsburgh Penguins, who looked bad against the Rangers, but much better last night against Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Hurricanes in town, Devils in town, and that's the end of October. You gotta play pretty well here, like 500 at the end of the month. Might represent a fair bit of success given the difficulty of some of these opponents, given how much respect I think we got to have for Crosby, for Bedard, and those would be two of the weaker teams, right? The rest of them, it's like a who's who of Stanley Cup contenders and a Philly team that we know has posed problems for this club in the past. So, you know, 500 this month, if having lost to Calgary, you take it.
That's the thing, right? And I think it puts... We're doing our best to, like... On the one hand, consistently emphasize how early in the season it is, but then also find a way to turn these games into must-win games. It's like, it puts a lot of stakes on tonight.
That loss to Calgary, it's going to loom large. No, look.
Really amped up the pressure on this one.
No, I wasn't saying it from a perspective of, I'm just saying, like, this is a tough month, right? This is genuinely a difficult month. And, you know, like, getting a point against Calgary is actually helpful, right? Because... 500 at the end of October,
yep.
Given some of what's stacked up against the Canucks, given the fact that they're down one of their four most important players. Like, you know, missing Thatcher Demko is not a lot different than missing Quinn Hughes or JT Miller or Elias Pettersson, right? It's like, those are the four most important players that this team has. We all know that, don't we? This isn't a hot take. You miss one of those players and go 500 in the first month of the season without them?
Well, and especially, as you said, while you're trying to do all this other stuff.
That's fine.
Right? Like, while you're trying to innovate and go through this really difficult process of building a new identity. Okay.
It's a long season. Sometimes, you know, I know last season warped our brains, but truly, like, sometimes just holding the fort when things go against you is a mark of a good team. That might be what the Canucks are in for. They also could just, like, get hot again and have 109 PDO, and I'll be like, wow, this is unbelievable.
That's
how
what
they always do this? You know, that's possible too. But, you know, fat part of the bell curve stuff, if the Canucks can just steady the ship here, that's fine.
Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news and sports updates, all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJs, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds. Find the radio, podcast, news, and sports you love. Canucks taking on the Flyers at Rogers Arena. It's Philly's first game of the year. Lots going on with Philly, right? We mentioned Matvei Michkov. They've got another rookie in Jet Luchenko who's going to be in the lineup. Always a fascinating team. We'll talk to Charlie O'Connor about them from Philly Sports next. Get the lowdown on tonight's opponent for the Canucks. That's coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. I'm feeling great, man. It's Friday. It's Thanksgiving. We got a long weekend, a rare long weekend for us in season. We're the only show that gets Monday off because we're playing a Giants game. It's just simply fantastic stuff. I'm having a great time here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We're live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Charlie O'Connor from Philly Sports is going to join us momentarily here to look ahead to tonight's matchup between the Canucks and the Flyers. You look like you have something to say.
No, I always have something to say. Don't worry about it.
That's true.
It'd be much more shocking if I looked like I had nothing to say.
That's true. That would be alarming. I was like, uh-oh. What are we going to do here?
Drance looks like he's out of ideas.
Just sitting quietly in the corner. It's like, that's not how it normally goes.
I'm excited to chat with Charlie, though.
I'm not used to this at all.
Charlie's a beat writer close to my heart because we both came up in sort of the analytics blogosphere in the early days, but mm-hmm. unlike a lot of our more research-oriented colleagues that ended up working in R&D departments across the league, Charlie's become a full-time beat, and there's another similarity between the Canucks and the Flyers over the years that I'm curious to get his take on.
All right, now joining us, as mentioned, he covers the Flyers for Philly Sports. He is Charlie O'Connor. Charlie, thanks for doing this today. How are you?
Hey, of course. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's our pleasure.
Yeah, we're thrilled, man. We're so excited. How you doing, bud?
Doing good.
All right. Drance told me he's going to do his best to take this one off the rails, so I'm going to do my best to keep it on the rails.
No, we'll see. I'm going to take it over right away.
All right.
Charlie, I'm always curious to get your thoughts, not just on the Flyers. We'll do that too. Don't worry. But I'm always curious to get your thoughts on the Canucks. Like, I saw you tweet the other day about the St. Louis Blues being just another team on every other team's schedule, completely ruined and stuck in mediocrity. And it reminded me of something, which is the following. I think you and I came up both sort of writing about analytics, ended up being beat writers, and we've both covered two teams that are as averse to ever rebuilding or even thinking long term traditionally as any other team in the league. And I think as a result, we have a shared disgust for the mushy middle. What are your thoughts on the state of the Vancouver Canucks, given that context?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely more optimistic about them than I was this time last year.
Yep.
And I think it's in large part because of two things. Number one, I think their depth has gotten better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a total black hole like it was a few years ago where they had, you know, good guys at the top and then nothing beyond that. So that's number one. And then number two, I think that the Stars have taken steps forward. Now, I think to me, like, that's the thing I'm the most fascinated about this year. And obviously, you know, with Thatcher Demko, there's injury issues, so you can't really figure that out yet. But what I'm most fascinated to watch with the Canucks this year is all of the guys last year, all the top of the lineup guys that the Canucks have that took steps forward. Is that their new normal, or are they going to drop off? And not that they'll be bad players, but are they going to go back to kind of where they were before they took the step? Because if everything we saw from the Canucks Stars last year is real, and that's just who they are, that they've all reached a new level, then I think the Canucks can be contenders. If those guys are just really good rather than incredibly good, then I'm not sure they can be. So I'm really watching the top of the lineup guys this year for the Canucks to see if they can do it again.
with where Vancouver's positioned, given the season that they had, given sort of the performance of the elite talent in this lineup and your assessment of their depth, like, do you view this team as a contender going into this campaign?
I personally would put them maybe a tier down. I don't consider them to be like one of my cup favorites,
right.
But they're a team where if some things break their way, sure. And I think the Demko situation certainly plays a role in that. You know, I might be more optimistic if I was confident that, you know, he's going to play a lot of games. And when he plays, he will be the guy he was last year. That's certainly part of it, but I maybe don't view them as a favorite. But they're certainly in the mix. I expect them to make the playoffs. Like, last year, I wasn't sure. This year, I certainly expect them to be in there. And if a few things break their way, they could, in my estimation, get there. Not quite there yet for me, but they're on the right track.
How do you account for the purity with which Vancouver ran last season from a conversion rate perspective, from a health perspective, in sort of assessing this team? Does, you know, we all know the profile of like a massive shooting percentage spike team. Everyone on the club has a career year. Everyone's buying it going into the next season and they disappoint. Like, the Canucks feel like a team that has at least aspects of that in their profile, although they also improved so much process wise throughout last season that I think that commentary has been muted both in the national media and locally leading into the season. How much do you account for sort of how this team ran last season in assessing your expectations this year?
Well, I mean, I think the shooting percentages, especially from a lot of the depth guys, they're going to go down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't think, you know, they're going to have all those guys shooting above 10%. But I also don't think that it's going to completely torpedo their season if those guys are scoring at, you know, 8-9% this year. I don't think that's going to kill them. So it's a factor. I mean, it certainly plays into, I think, why I don't view the Canucks as, you know, one of the favorites, because I am expecting some regression. But I also think that, you know, again, if the top guys stay really good and if the depth guys continue to show that they're quality, I expect a good team. I expect a good team with the upside to be a great team again if some things break their way.
Zeroing in on the Flyers side of things, Charlie, I mean, I think for me anyways, the big storyline going in tonight is that it's Matvei Michkov's NHL debut. And I was saying earlier in the show, it feels like he's flying under the radar a little bit, at least out here. I'm sure it's not the case in Philadelphia, but whether it's because of, you know, Connor Bedard going first and having a great year as his rookie season, Macklin Celebrini coming in as a hyped rookie this year. But, you know, I know Matvei Michkov was very productive in the preseason. How much hype should there be? What are your expectations for Michkov in his first NHL season?
Well, I can tell you this. There's not any muted hype in Philly. Everybody is really, really excited about Matvei Michkov. Now, I don't know if there isn't a ton of hype nationally, but let me put it this way. If he plays the way he did in preseason, that national hype's going to come, because this guy, I think everybody more or less knew that the skill was there. But the question was, how quickly was it going to translate? Well, it looks like it's translating, and he's not all there yet. Like, you were seeing at the end of camp, at the end of preseason, the goal scoring touch finally coming together. But the one thing that's came fully formed is the passing. He is a really, really good playmaker, just in terms of the way he sees the ice, the decisions he makes. And I'm not even just talking about setting up scoring chances. I'm talking about helping the team move up ice, move through the neutral zone. He just has great vision and anticipation, and he has the creativity where, you know, he's not necessarily even passing the puck to a player. He's passing the puck to a spot, kind of the way a quarterback leads a receiver into a route. Like, he just thinks the game at a really high level. And look, I can't say I'm expecting him to go point per game in his rookie year, but I think he's going to have a really good rookie year. I think he has star level potential. And I think that's why Flyers fans are so excited, because they haven't had a guy like this in years. You know, they had, they obviously had Claude Giroux, but Claude Giroux didn't come with the hype that Matvei Michkov had. Claude Giroux was a guy who was, you know, a mid to late first round pick who dramatically exceeded expectations. Michkov, yeah, he went 7, but I think everybody knew he was a top 5, if not top 3 pick talent. And so far, he's showing everyone exactly why he was viewed that way.
You know, and I, even with prospects and young players, rookies as talented as Michkov, you do sometimes see a reluctance from teams to kind of throw them right into the deep end in terms of minutes, responsibility, role, and all that. And, you know, in Michkov's case also, he's playing for a very, very demanding coach in John Tortorella. What do you expect to see, especially early in the season, in terms of role for Michkov and kind of how he fits into how John Tortorella wants the team to play?
Well, the Torts factor is obviously an unknown. So far, Torts has said all the right things. He doesn't want to make him into a checker. He's not going to overcoach him. He's going to focus on foundational things, but not, you know, killing him if he cheats a little bit on a play. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. You know, John Tortorella is hard on everybody. So I expect that at some point this year, you know, whether he scratches Michkov, whether he sits him for a period, I don't know. But it's a John Tortorella experience. You expect it. That said, I do think Tortorella ultimately is going to like him because I think the work ethic is there, the competitiveness. These are all things that John Tortorella loves, and these are all things that Michkov absolutely has. As for role, he's playing on the top line tonight. He's basically what they're banking on to fix their power play. So I think he's going to get the minutes. Now, whether that's 20 minutes versus 16 minutes, I don't know. It might depend on the game. I don't think they're going to want to run the kid into the ground. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's going to be lacking for opportunity. Let me put it that way.
Charlie, you speak about the Tortorella experience. You know, one thing we've talked about every year of this show, because the Canucks always go to Philly or play Philly early in the year these days, is you never want to bump into a John Tortorella team in the first half. Now, we saw probably the most explosive version of that we've seen in a while last season, where a team was this feel-good story, great underlying numbers process, just when everyone bought in, they collapsed, which has happened to Torts relatively repeatedly over the course of his, you know, storied career as an NHL head coach, including his one season stint in Vancouver. Any reason to hope that this season will be different?
Well, I think the big reason that people have hope in Philadelphia is because of Matvei Michkov.
Right.
I mean, you know, last year they were a team that, as you said, had a really good process. They drove play at 5-on-5. What they didn't have were, you know, impact game changers. And they have good players. You know, Travis Konecny is a legitimate top line forward. They have guys like Owen Tippett. You know, Travis Sanheim, Cam York are good defensemen. They have good players. But they didn't have that guy who could just change a game. And where it really showed was on the power play. Their power play was ghastly last year. It was 12% efficiency, worse in the league by far. And the reason for that, well, I think some of it was that the power play wasn't terribly well constructed. It wasn't well coached, but a lot of it was they just didn't have that one guy on a power play that teams had to account for. They had a bunch of dudes who would pass the puck around the perimeter, and no one really had, no one created gravity, as I call it. You know, it's one of those concepts in basketball where, you know, does a guy pull defense to you, and that opens up spaces for everyone else. Well, Flyers didn't have that this year. They hope they have it in Michkov. And if they do, you know, if the Flyers, they don't even have to have a good power play. If the Flyers just have a, you know, an 18-19% power play and, you know, score a few more goals because they're not purely a rush-based team, they can actually score off the cycle because Michkov can find players in high-danger areas. They didn't miss the playoffs by that much last year. So I think that's the hope, is that everything holds. The process stays strong. They're still a good 5-on-5 team. The penalty kill is still good. The goaltending, you know, they obviously don't have Carter Hart for the first half of the year, but Sam Harrison, they have high hopes for him. The goaltending is at least solid, and then Michkov puts them over the edge. I think that's the hope.
Another very interesting rookie who's going to be in the Flyers lineup tonight, Jet Luchenko, who is a first-round pick this most recent draft. And, you know, interesting, doesn't necessarily have the profile of a guy who goes right from junior to the NHL. You know, only listed at 5'11". He was 13th overall, so certainly a valued prospect, but not a top-five guy. What did Luchenko do during training camp and preseason to earn this opportunity to start the season with the Flyers?
Well, I think the big thing is he's completely sold the coaching staff. John Tortorella loves this kid. And there are a lot of reasons for it. Number one, and this is a classic Tortorella thing, Luchenko showed up for the first day of camp where Torts does his infamous skate test, and Luchenko blew it away. And he didn't even look tired. He was just flying around there. He's a really, really fast skater, but he's also in incredible shape. So I think from the jump, Torts had his eye on it because, you know, he runs this death skate, and this 18-year-old kid's out skating everybody. It's like, okay, gotta watch him. then Torts started watching, he really liked the details of his game. He really liked the two-way elements, the defensive elements, just the little things that coaches tend to eat up. He loved that. So I think those are the big reasons, really. It's the skating and the fitness, and then the two-way details of his game that lead them to believe that he can at least hold his own for a few games at least. The big question, and this is my concern about it, is Luchenko, if he wants to live up to his draft status, he needs to develop an offensive game. He scored at a decent clip last year in the OHL with Guelph, but it wasn't an incredible clip. It was a little over point per game. Can he develop that in the NHL, or will he have to go back to juniors where there's more time and space available to him in order to develop that side of his game? I don't know, and I don't think the Flyers know either. But I think where they're at is they just want to give him a shot. They want to see how he looks in a few games, and then they'll make the decision from there.
Charlie, we saw last year that the Flyers just seemed to be a bad matchup for this Vancouver Canucks team. I think it's the dynamic way they attack off the rush, in addition to the fact that their in-zone play is solid enough that at least last year when Vancouver was, you know, pretty dependent on wearing teams down and just seeking out second stick opportunities, like I just think it was a good, like, their kung fu matched up well with Vancouver's brand of kung fu. What do you expect from the game tonight, and I guess again when the two teams meet next weekend?
Yeah, I'm not going to say I'm expecting the Flyers to do what they did to the Canucks last year by any means. The Canucks are a good team. I think the Flyers are a pretty good team too, so I don't think they'll be pushovers by any means. But it's so tough to say that they'll be able to replicate, especially because last year the Flyers surprised everybody, you know. And it wasn't just that they surprised everybody and that they were better, it was that they were playing an entirely different style than what they played in year one under John Tortorella, when they were more of a dump and chase, grinded out team. Last year they came in and shocked everybody and basically turned themselves into a transition controlled entry squad. Now teams have they have the book out on them. Now I think, you know, a good coach like Rick Tocchet probably will have the Canucks better prepared, you know, to handle that style. Then it just kind of comes down to who makes more plays. Now, obviously the Canucks have the edge on high end talent. The Flyers probably are, I would say, a deeper club overall, but you know, I don't know if Matvei Mishkov scores a hat trick in his debut, they're not going to lose. If Luchenko looks overwhelmed and Mishkov doesn't do much, and you know, the Flyers defense gets overwhelmed by the Vancouver power play and they're up front attack, then they're going to lose. But I certainly don't think this is a case of the Flyers have the Canucks number. I'm certainly not ready to say that.
Charlie, I wanted to ask you about the situation in the crease for the Flyers as well, with, you know, the big Russian Ivan Fedotov, played three games, I think, for them last year. He's there. It's also Samuel Ersson. I mean, what do you expect to see? How do they handle it? What are the reasonable expectations for that goalie duo to start the season for the Flyers?
Well, Sam Ersson is the number one. They've straight up said that, and they really like Ersson. They feel like, I actually wrote a feature on him late last night into this morning in anticipation of the season opener. But basically with Ersson, he played really well up until the final month and a half of the year, when the Flyers basically just ran him into the ground because they had no faith in any of their backup options. Obviously, Carter Hart was no longer available to them, and then none of their other goalies in their organization were any good. So they just ran him into the ground, crossed their fingers he would be able to hold up to it, and he ultimately did it. Now, what they love about Ersson, though, is that even though he did fall apart, you know, and there was probably about a 5-week stretch where he was just not playing well at all, and they just kept throwing him out there to get destroyed, he was able to reset by the end of the year. He delivered three straight really good games to close out the season, gave the Flyers a chance to make the playoffs in game 82 at least. They love his mindset. They love his attitude. They like the talent. And now they're going to give him a shot. And personally, I like Sam Ersson. I don't know if he has, you know, star level potential, but I think he has starting NHL goalie potential. And they're really excited to see what he can do. They're nervous. They don't know how he's going to react, but I think they believe that he can step up and take this opportunity to run with it. So we'll see.
Charlie, really appreciate the time. Enjoy the game in Vancouver tonight.
All right, thanks, guys.
That is Charlie O'Connor from Philly Sports covering the Philadelphia Flyers and giving us a good preview of what to expect from John Tortorella and Matvei Michkov and the Flyers this year and in the game tonight. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. A few more minutes here before we take a break, and then we'll chat with Dmitry Filipovich on the other side. Drance, I have a pop quiz for you.
Okay.
If you had to guess the NHL player not on the Canucks whose name has been mentioned most in the inbox today, who would you guess? A specific question about player X not on the Canucks.
Timothy Liljegren.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
Do you want to field one of those questions about Timothy Liljegren?
I don't think the Canucks are huge fans.
I think that's fair. I mean, does he have the profile of a Canucks defenseman? Not really.
Not really.
He's not super undersized. Like,
no,
I think
no,
maybe
no.
There's the perspective that he is.
I actually think the problem is more that he's not an exception. He's not super dynamic with the puck.
Well, the thing you hear about, and you know, I know our pal Jay Fresh is putting up the charts and everything, and I think Kipper made this point. Hold on.
Oh man.
But it's coming from both sides of it, right? Like Kipper and Jay Fresh, very different perspectives.
Sure.
But the point they both arrived at was there's no one thing to like grab onto. There's no one skill where it's like that's what he does at a really high level, right? It's like theoretically he's this like not super big but not super undersized really good puck moving defenseman, but it's like, but is he actually that good at moving the puck?
No.
So does he do enough to kind of overlook some of the other flaws in his game, which maybe aren't even as flawed as people think, you know what I mean? But it's just kind of like when you're just kind of there across the board, that's a recipe for teams not being that interested in
you. Mean, I like him, I think, enough that if the Canucks thought, hey, we need to bring in a guy who can move the puck a little bit better, like key the breakout a little bit better than what we've currently got with like Juulsen and Desharnais sort of switching time on the right side. Like if that's what they feel they need, and I don't think they'd make that decision today, but like a month from now, right? If you're like, you know, I think maybe he could fit the bill. Could he be enough of a puck mover and enough of a, like a overall IQ defenseman that if you plugged him in with Quinn Hughes, he could give you the Ethan Bear effect, which would let you play Hronek down lineup and then Myers down lineup, and then maybe you have a little bit more secondary puck moving push than you currently have. Look, maybe. My understanding, I don't think the Canucks historically have been very interested in this player. So I'd be pretty surprised if they kick the tires here. I think he's a pretty low upside guy, but that doesn't mean that he can't necessarily play. And I'd add this. I think if you're a guy who's like kind of limited in every respect, but also like a 2 out of 5
but
in every respect.
But kind of fine at everything too. Yeah.
That might be the profile of the sort of like Ethan Bear level guy that we've been talking about, who at least from my perspective, I'd at least be interested in maybe seeing the Canucks, take a spin with, but not at like retail price or anything.
Well, and I think one of the big sticking points here is he's got an extra year at $3 million, right? So it's not as if it's like, hey, $1 million, take a flyer on him, no problem, right? Like, that's a significant commitment that you're making. Now,
I'm also
retention
not a huge,
and all that, who knows, but
I'm personally not a huge fan. Like, I remember arguing with people about, you know, I thought he was a pretty low upside guy, and then he had that one really strong season in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some of the people that I'd been arguing with about, these are people in the industry, got their dunks off. But I think time has brought this one back to my side.
And I think I'll read part of one of the questions that came in, but a lot of people texted in about it. But this is from Spencer in Maple Ridge, who said, is it worth giving up an asset for him, or do they want to wait longer to build up the cap savings to go after a bigger fish? And
I think that's the answer. Maybe
you get to February and it's like other exciting options haven't materialized, and you're like, okay, we do have this cap space, what are we going to do, can we work something out? Maybe you go there, but there's no reason to like get ahead of the market and commit your cap space and commit your assets on the player now. It's a down the list option for later in the year, maybe.
I want to see this team build up a war chest of cap space and take a run at like a top pair calibered guy.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? As opposed to a guy who, hey, if we squint, maybe he can have an Ethan Bear type effect on Quinn Hughes. Like that to me is just far less interesting than what I think this Canucks team should do, which is, you know, take another run at a Lindholm caliber forward or a top pair caliber defender as the season goes along. Like, keep your powder dry for those crazy opportunities that sometimes open up in this league and present teams with a chance to, you know, swing big with their eye on Stanley's mug.
All right. On that note, we will take a break here. Dmitry Filipovich from the Hockey PDO cast joins us next.
Oh, we're going to draft all-time Canucks defenseman. I'm going to task us to build a full blue line each. So this is going to be six-rounder. So we're going to leave extra time.
So we're going to draft 18 Canucks defensemen.
18 Canucks defensemen all-time. We're going to build our own all-time Canucks blue lines in Edler's honor.
Let's go. That's exciting. I'm actually really excited for that. That's a good one. All right, we'll take a break. Dmitry joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintec studio.
Canucks Talk.
That was a rare role reversal where I was leaning back in my chair without my headphones on, happily talking away, and Drance was like, "We're coming back." And I was like, "Oh, I have stuff to do."
Yeah, be professional.
I'm not going to start now.
The Canucks' try hard ethos. Not one shared on our show.
No, not for me, frankly. I could take it or leave it. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks Talk also brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com.
Love the people at Avenue Machinery.
Absolutely. Now joining
us. And Douglas Lake Equipment.
Of course. Don't single out Avenue Machinery.
No.
I saw an ad for...
I like to find them together at DLEAMC.com.
I saw an ad for Kubota, a Kubota products.
Nice.
On TV today, and I was like, man, that would be awesome.
I know.
I want a skid steer now.
Yeah, to do what?
Carry some firewood around? That's what was happening in the ad. I was like, this looks so good, man. This would be amazing. Anyways, now joining us in studio, as he does every time on Friday this week, every week of Friday. I don't know what I'm saying, guys. It's Friday. I'm almost done here. It is Dmitry Filipovich, host of the Hockey PDO cast. What's going on, man?
Friday afternoon before a long weekend at that, Jamie.
Oh,
this is twice the fun.
Let's go. Yeah. I'm not going to say it's peak Friday. That's the last Friday before we take off for Christmas.
Yeah.
That's like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's peak Friday.
Yeah.
This is pretty good, though, before a long weekend.
Well, especially because we all have turkey dinner. And usually we draft Thanksgiving plates.
We did that last year.
We've done that.
I know, yeah. But we can do it again. We're not going to, though. Today, special occasion in celebration of Alexander Edler's retirement, we're going to draft all-time Canucks blue lines. But first...
Finally a draft that is hockey-themed and makes sense.
Yeah, it's the rare twofer. Sorry, guys, I'm off my game today. Let's start, though, with talking about the Philadelphia Flyers and Matvei Michkov about to make his NHL debut in this city. Why are the Flyers a bad matchup for the Canucks?
Well, we should preface this by saying you and I, on my show, the PDO cast, did the watchability rankings this week. And
we were
generally pretty in sync with a lot of our takes.
Except the Flyers.
We got into a heated debate.
Oh, wow.
About the Flyers. Tom just went on a rant about John Chiarella and how he's done with them.
I did it again today, too. So yeah. Everyone's...
Oh, right. There you go. Okay, you just recycled it.
Yeah, I did. And look, it was the same... No, Jamie was just like...
I brought up the end of last season's experience with the Flyers and how I thought it got more ugly than a typical Tortorella season.
Jamie basically presented it as...
disagreed strongly with that.
Jamie presented it as something like, no one could have seen coming. And I was like, what are you talking about?
Right.
That's not how I presented it.
Yeah,
but
you did. You were like, and then no
one... unprecedented thing happened in the NHL.
Exactly. And so I had to push back and be like, that's exactly what we have to expect from John Tortorella teams. But you're right. There's a predictability to this team, but that doesn't mean that early in the season I'm not excited to watch them attack off the rush and play hockey.
Yeah, catching them a couple times right at the start of the season is a bad break.
Bad break.
You wish these games were scheduled in like mid-March.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we saw that last year. Now, I will say, I think it kind of coincided with Travis Konecny, who was their best player, getting hurt. Now, you could argue that maybe that happened because John Tortorella was playing on like 22, 23 minutes a night for a large stretch of the season and wouldn't have happened otherwise. But at full health now, you look at this team and you add Matvei Michkov to it, assuming they keep playing the way they did last year, I'm pretty excited to watch them, at least until that sort of runs its course and they start getting banged up and worn out by Tortorella and his tactics, because they play off the rush, they play fast, they don't really take shifts off. And so for me, that's a very aesthetically pleasing yes. brand of hockey. Now, last year, they just didn't have enough talent to really capitalize on it, right? They were amongst the league leaders in like rush chances, shot volume in general, but were 31st or 32nd in shooting percentage, save percentage, power play percentage, like every skill-based category, they weren't good. So if Michkov can at least bring them towards like some level of competence in those categories and they keep playing this way, I actually am pretty high on this team, at least to start the year.
How good is Michkov going to be?
It's always risky.
Yeah.
You never know how it's going to translate, right? Especially early on. I think what we've seen
in the preseason. Take, Jim. Come on.
I think he's going to be awesome. He's going to be awesome. You know what?
Twist my arm. He's going to be amazing.
I think he's going to be transformative. Like, I think he's immediately going to make not only stuff happen for himself, but most importantly for his teammates. And I just said how they didn't have enough skill otherwise last year. And so I think he's going to bring guys along for the ride with him. And that's exactly what this specific team needs.
He's probably an average first overall level talent.
I think so, yeah.
You know, like, I don't know if he's a Macklin or Bedard level first overall talent, but like an average first overall pick level talent. Those guys usually are pretty good immediately, especially if they're 19.
I was going to say, especially if it's their draft like plus 2 year, right? Yeah. Not coming right out of the draft. Yes. So
I expect him to be a difference maker off the bat. Personally, is that a hot take?
No, I think that's reasonable.
I'm going to pick over under 59.5 points. I say he hits the over.
Well, and again, as Charlie was saying, we were talking about, he's going to get every opportunity, right? Like first power play, first line with their best players, all of those things, minutes probably from Torts, right? Like, now we'll see. Maybe there could be some periods he's on the bench here or there, a game or two, but like, he's the focus of their offense, right? It's him and Konechny. Charlie said, hey, they're basically going to count on him to single-handedly fix their power play.
Oh, and tip it erasure.
They're going to give him every opportunity to put up points in a big way.
And not only that, but there's no league like the NHL. Like, let's preface it with that. But we have seen him get like pro reps in a real league against grown men. And so this isn't also like a guy going from major junior, like, all right, is he going to get beat up a little bit? Like, I feel like he'll be able to acquit himself quite well physically as well. So I'm really not worried about him at all.
With two games against the Flyers over the course of the next week, the Canucks also have the Tampa Bay Lightning and perhaps the Alexander Barkov-less Florida Panthers. Mm. So as much as you have a tough break catching Philly when they're most likely to be imposing early in the year, sort of the opposite with the Florida Panthers down one of the three best centermen in the game. Let's start with Tampa Bay. What are you seeing? I mean, we saw some signs of slippage from them last year. Now there's no Steven Stamkos. You know, they won't make their home debut this weekend against the Hurricanes due to a hurricane. How high are you on the Tampa Bay Lightning going into the season?
I think they're gonna be fun to watch. Like, I think that power play in particular, I don't think is gonna miss a beat without Steven Stamkos. Obviously, going from him to a guy like Cam Atkinson isn't ideal necessarily in terms of shooting talent. I don't know why they didn't go after a guy like Daniel Sprong. Instead, he would have made much more sense in that role. I think with Kucherov's brilliance, his playmaking, his ability to just whip the puck around and set his teammates up for grade A opportunities, they're going to be top three in the league again on the power play. The blue line, you look at it, and I guess there could be an argument to be made they might actually be better, because you and I have a long-standing argument about Mikhail Sergachev and how good he actually is.
Yeah.
I don't think necessarily that stripping him from that lineup, and he was injured for a lot of the second half of last year as well anyways, and adding a few other guys who can move the puck and actually skate, I think they could be fine there. But yeah, I mean, they've been deteriorating in terms of secondary scoring and talent for years now. This is sort of the peak version of that. Arguably no player is going to have more sort of burden and responsibility on them than Kucherov to create offensively than he will for this team. That top line is going to be amazing, but beyond that, it's a bunch of very winnable minutes.
How do you expect Jake Guentzel to fit into the equation in Tampa?
Yeah, there might be a bit of a adjustment period. Obviously, he played with Crosby for so long and had success, and if you can sort of think the game along with him and know where to go and where he's going to move the puck, I think you'll be able to fit in with pretty much anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Kucherov is so unique, though, in terms of like getting the puck off the wall and scanning quickly and then just throwing the puck ahead for you and kind of expecting you to be there. So there might be a few hiccups there, but I mean, he's an elite player at finding open space on the ice. Kucherov is arguably the best player in the league at getting you the puck when you're there, and so I expect a lot of goals from those two.
Seems like a pretty good thing to pair together.
Let's talk quickly about the Panthers without Barkov. Mm-hmm. I mean, this forward group is in Florida is like the basis of everything they do. Barkov's just overall brilliance is really the single key driver. And yet, you know, with Reinhardt, with the ability to play Luis Duran in his, at third line center, if they want to bump up Lindell up the lineup, I mean, they should still be an imposing side, right?
Yeah, they should. I mean, they had, they, if any team has the depth and sort of the, just the system in place,
yes,
to sort of
insulate.
You're never going to replace those minutes, no, but like be able to patch it together and just keep playing the same way you have, even though you don't have that talent. It's probably this Panthers team. It's so devastating. It's such a blessing and curse. You saw like exactly, I mean, it was a freak injury, but it was also such an avoidable one. I think it was,
yeah,
like chasing down a player you're probably not going to get to against Tim Stützle at the end of a, literally the second game of the regular season
after
winning the Stanley Cup,
too,
it's like
yeah,
you might be one of those where you don't necessarily go full bore into the boards,
right?
But he has no off switch.
Like
he's like going full defense at all times.
Yep.
And so
without
unfortunately,
stick, trying to be, yeah.
So it's really unfortunate that happened. I hope he's okay. I guess we haven't heard anything. He probably, I assume, will be out for this
game.
Some initial
reporting that it's going to be week to week.
Okay. So not month to month, at least.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, encouraging.
No,
because
like,
it looked like that could have been like totally blown,
yeah,
out of
so it's David Pignata from the fourth period, but he's reported that it's week to week with some sort of, you know, high ankle sprain or whatever.
Gotcha.
So.
Well, it's still a tough team. I mean, listen, like I just said, no off switch for Barkov. That's kind of what this team has been created in his vision almost.
Yes.
It's like, they're just going to go all four lines all the time, peak forecheck, just try to attack you, try to goad you into penalties after every whistle. They're very annoying to play against. And so, yeah, it's a difficult matchup regardless of if he's in the lineup or not.
How much concern do you have about their blue line subtracting Brandon Montour? I'm just looking at their depth chart
here,
right?
Zero.
Forsling, Ekblad, you love that at the top.
But the
other four guys,
we've been
Mikula,
texting about this.
Kulikov, Belinsky's, Nate Schmidt.
Belinsky's.
I'm completely unmoved. And I like Brandon Montour as a player. I could not be less concerned about it. I just think, if anything,
fair enough.
Like, it's not ideal, certainly, because I do think he had a bit of a unique skill set on that blue line in terms of like his aggressiveness and,
yep,
his shot taking ability and all of that. But they're going to be able to put it together. And as we've talked about for the past couple of years, they do such a good job of insulating defensemen. We've mm-hmm. seen guys like Oliver Ekman-Larsson, for example, come in and look like the best version of themselves because they're just asked to essentially keep skating forward all the time, not really have to worry about any other stuff. And so as long as you can move competently, and some of those guys you mentioned can, especially,
yeah,
Nate Schmidt, even at this point of his career, that's a pretty ideal spot for them to be in.
So let's do the Canucks draft. Canucks defensemen.
All right.
Now, wait. I'm specifying the rules here.
Okay.
If you're drafting the defensemen, you get them for what they accomplished as a Canucks player.
For their tenure on the team.
So you can't select Matthew Schneider, right? And get, you know, the like Toronto and Detroit 60-point version of Matthew Schneider in your lineup. The other thing we're going to do, because there's such an obvious fall-off after the first overall pick.
Yes.
For the first time in Canucks talk history, we are going third-round reversal.
Okay.
So the first, whoever picks first, right, will not get the snake spot on the way back.
I think we should also task our producers with randomizing the first pick, the draft order.
Yeah.
Because it's, as you said, it's too valuable to be left up to like, oh, Dimitri's the guest, we'll let him do it.
Yeah, totally. Lena, we need you to assign the draft order to us here.
And we're trying to build out.
You're building out
a six-man
blue line
here. Okay.
And like, be conscious. Like, you got to have guys you
gotta
can play
have
on
the
right side.
Kill.
Yeah, you got, exactly. You got to. Got to be very serious here. Cap compliant.
Very serious.
Very
this
serious.
Is extremely serious.
This is, we're doing this for Edler. So
all right, that's right.
Yeah,
Lena,
what's the draft order?
I just eeny meeny miny mode.
Okay, and what'd you get?
I got Dim first.
Oh wow,
I hate that.
I got Drance second.
Let's go.
All right.
And Jamie is last. Sorry. Oh,
it's all right.
Tough beat. All right, give me Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
I thought about it. You know, I've been preparing all week for this particular draft with the intention and the hope that I'd have the first overall pick. And so, give me Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, good.
That's about the easiest pick you'll
ever
make. That's a good one.
Nice. Must be nice.
Well, now I don't get to pick for a long time, though.
That's true.
It's going to be like the Canucks blue line. Quinn Hughes carrying
the
entire
second
unit.
Pick as normal. You just don't get
the third
pick.
Round.
You don't get the snake
got it,
spot.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. I see.
Okay. I'm going to take Alex Edler.
All right. I'm going to take Matthias Olin.
Okay.
Oh, and I have two here, right?
Yeah.
Ooh, and then to run my power play, since I don't have Quinn Hughes available to me, I'm going to go with Paul Reinhardt.
Had
back-to-back 57-point seasons for the Canucks at the end of his career.
So you have Olin
and Reinhardt.
and I have Edler. So I have another pick here, and I am going to take... Oh man, I find this is honestly where it falls off, I think, a little bit. I'm going to take Christian Ehrhoff.
Interesting.
Yeah. Can play left or right.
Yeah. Pairing with Edler.
Pairing with Edler gives me one of the best top pairs in Canucks history.
Now, at the risk of making too much of this, are we...
No. There's no risk of that. That's what we're here to do.
We're getting just the version of the player that was on the Canucks.
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
Not like in terms of like we're making a lineup right now and we're getting the version they were on the Canucks 100%. And that's their playing capability.
You can't draft Ed Jovanovski and get like putting guys through a wall, yes, Florida Panthers Ed Jovanovski.
All right.
Fair. Or like Dave Babbage early in his career when he was a point per game defenseman.
100%. Yeah.
Okay. But that, which is too bad because that would be sick. It's your turn.
It is your pick.
Oh, it's my turn. Okay.
You only have one pick here though.
I only have one pick here.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? Even though some of his best years have come since he left the team, I still think he showed us enough during his tenure here. I'm going to go with Chris Tanev.
And
give myself the Hughes-Tanev pairing.
That's nice. I like that a lot.
Hughes-Tanev pairing. You love to see
I'd love to see that.
That's
together.
Pretty good.
I'm going to prioritize...
Hold on. Oh, yeah. It's back to you. Yeah,
back
okay.
to me. Right?
No.
No, it's back to you.
It's me
to
now,
you. Yeah,
right?
You're right.
Okay.
My bad.
What's going on?
Did I say what I was going to prioritize? Thank God I didn't.
No, you didn't. Woo! You sure dodged a bullet there.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to start to build out more my shutdown pairing. I'm going to go with Dan Hamhuis.
Okay. Good. You didn't take the guy I was going to take.
There you go.
Wait, way to mess it up.
Tom, he's already taken that guy, though.
No, I know. I'm looking to see what handedness he
is. Tom's Googling Paul Reinhart.
Just to make sure what handedness he was. And then you took Hamhuis. So you have three lefties, bud.
I don't care. Reinhart can play the right.
Because I was going to say, I'm going to prioritize the
righty. You have two lefties, too.
Yeah, but Ehrhoff's a righty, right side defenseman.
I don't care. I'll coach Reinhart up to play the right side.
Okay,
Doesn't matter.
I'm taking Kevin Bieksa, and I was going to prioritize taking a right-handed guy. So Kevin Bieksa was going to be my next pick anyway. Although it was a tough decision between him and Dan Hamhuis, and finally, Dim gets to add a third defenseman to his lineup.
All right, give me... it's a bit of an overlap after my most recent pick, but give me Willie Mitchell.
Okay.
All right. I love the blue line you're building, Tim.
I'm eating a lot of shots here.
Yeah, I mean, with Tanev Mitchell, too, like, you know, you're going to be a problem closing out games.
It's going to be Quinn Hughes handling every single puck. And then the other two guys using their faces to block it.
I love that.
So that was your third round, which we reversed, which means we go back to the normal order for the fourth round, which means it is...
me again, right?
I think it's you finally have a snake spot. Yeah.
Yes. You know what? Give me Philip Hronek here to play with Willie Mitchell.
Ooh, I like it.
Well, you also now can play Tanev with Willie Mitchell and have a shutdown pair. And
see, I'm looking for that versatility, utility.
I appreciate that. I like it. Okay, I'm going to take another righty. I don't want to miss out on the right-handed guy I really want here, so I am going to take Sammy Salo, most underrated defenseman in franchise history. Let's go.
Leads the Canucks in plus-minus amongst all defensemen ever, eh?
Heck yeah. Tied with Dana Murzyn and Dan Hamhuis.
Dan Hamhuis, okay.
Dang. Salo, I really wanted Sammy Salo. That's a good
Everyone
pick.
Really wants Sammy Salo.
That's
Sammy
a good
Salo
pick.
Rocks.
I am going to go...
I've just built the 2011 D-Corp.
Yeah, really? You have everyone except Hamhuis.
It's so sick.
It was a good decor. I'm going to go... I'm punting on handedness. I don't care. We're going to make the adjustments, the tactical adjustments.
Yeah, you've already done that.
We're going all left-handed, so I'm going to take Ed Jovanovski here.
Okay.
That guy was awesome.
Where are you going to play him?
I don't care.
Okay.
No, play with Hamhuis.
Okay.
Do I get another one here?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to take Jovanovski, and I'm going to take Jyrki Lume.
Nice.
Another left shot guy. So
honestly, you have enough versatile guys. I think you'll be fine.
I think I'll be fine.
I think you'll be able to hobble through here. Okay, my pick is next. Feel like I'm, you know what? There's actually a really good righty still available, a sort of down lineup. You know what? I need a lefty. I'm gonna take an offensively minded guy to play with Sammy Salo. I'm gonna take Jeff Brown, baby.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah,
that's a good under the radar one.
Brown.
I like that.
And Dim, it's your pick.
Oh, man. There's a few names here. I'm looking up some lists. And there's some names that I just never got to watch.
Yeah.
So I feel like I shouldn't take them. Because
that's like, I know like people are going to text in like Dennis Kearns and stuff. And it's like, I just don't have enough of a frame of reference. Doug Lidster.
Like, I feel like I should take Doug Lidster based on his point total here, but I wouldn't be able to tell you about his game.
Yeah, fair enough.
Tom?
What? You want me to tell you about his game?
Did you watch a little Doug Lidster?
I mean, offensive defenseman.
Oh, I need that on my team. Okay, give me a little Doug Lidster.
Okay. You got Doug Lidster, buddy.
I mean, 307 points in 666 career games to the Canucks.
Played in the 80s.
Still good.
It is still good, of course.
My two most recent picks were Tan Evan Mitchell. I need some puck moving here.
Fair. And then you pick again. So you've got Lidster on the right side. You need a lefty or a left side guy anyway.
Hmm. That's a great...
Kearns is a lefty if you just want to...
No.
Play it safe.
You know what? Give me Brent Sopel.
Ooh, Brent Sopel's a righty.
It's okay. Oh, that's the issue with this exercise. Yeah. I'll be fine on my third pair.
I don't know, man. You've built a pretty unrealistic third pair there. All right. I take my last guy. I'm taking Harold Sneps to fill in a shutdown pair with Bieksa. I'm pretty confident I won this exercise. Jamie, you go.
You're always pretty confident, and then it's always not true. Anyways, I'm going to take Dennis Kearns. Because he's what, like third in all of the statistical categories for the team. So
you're completing your six lefties.
Six lefties, guys.
Your head coach is going to hate you.
Everyone watch out.
Your head coach is going to despise
the
team.
You've got Dennis Kearns on the top pair for Jamie here?
Well, who do you want? Okay, so lay it out. Lay it out how you're going to actually deploy your defense.
All right, who do I have? I have Oland.
Kearns, okay. Reinhardt, Lume, Hamhuis, Jovo.
Okay, I'm going to go Oland. Yeah, sure. I'll go Oland, Kearns.
Yeah.
I'll go Reinhardt, Hamhuis.
Okay.
And I'll go...
You're playing Hamhuis on the right side? Holy cow.
No, I'm playing Reinhardt on the right side. And then I'll go Jovo... Who was my last guy?
Lume.
Jovo Lume. Love that.
I guess.
Oh, that's dominant. That's outrageously good.
That is so bad, dude. I can't believe you built a bad blue line out of Canucks greats. Dimitri, tell us how you're going to deploy this pair.
You know what? I'm going to go Hughes-Roenick. Okay. And then I'm going to go Mitchell Tanev.
I think that makes sense.
Just eat up all of the defensive minutes.
Yep.
And then throw out Doug Lidster to carry Brent Sobel around a little bit.
Sounds good.
So you guys are pulling a Hockey Canada where it's like, oh, we got to have the right role. We're not building an all-star team. We got to make sure we have all the boxes checked. And it's like, no, just take the best players. Take the best players and they'll figure it out.
Okay. I'm going Edler, Ehrhoff. I'm going Harold Sneps, Bieksa matchup pair. And then I've got Jeff Brown and Sammy Salo crushing, destroying soft minutes. My team is so sick. So, so good. I'm laughing.
Sheer talent. Always bet on talent.
Yeah, but you don't even have as much talent as I do.
Yes, I do. What?
No chance.
I definitely do.
No chance. Ask anyone who watched in the 80s if you'd rather have Reinhardt, Kearns, or Sneps. Like, I got the best defenseman of the era that you're boasting you have the best defenseman from. Man, you really stepped in it.
I mean, I got Yurki Lume, so I'm happy with it.
If I was you,
I got Lume and Jovo.
If I was you, this would ruin my weekend.
That's why I'm happy I'm not you.
Gotta do better next time.
Yeah, like, oh, man, I'm going to really have to. Anyway, text in to tell us who you think won.
Oh,
but there we go. The best... Canucks blue lines, our all-time Canucks blue lines. Fun exercise, guys.
Fantastic exercise. Before we let you go for the weekend, and by the way, everyone, have a fantastic Thanksgiving. Stay safe. Enjoy yourself. Hopefully get some time off with your family. Get to enjoy a nice meal. We have the day off on Monday, so we'll be back on Tuesday. Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news and sports updates, all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJ, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds. Find the radio, podcast, news, and sports you love. Have a great Thanksgiving. We're back on Tuesday for more Canucks Talk. Sportsnet 650.